Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
I'm a family physician. Does anybody know what that means? Good. So you might learn something. This is... Not knowing about family medicine is a very New York thing, and it's common actually in large cities. But basically, family doctors are specialists in what's called general practice. So family doctors are sort of what we think is family doctors. And that means we take care of everybody, from newborns, some of us deliver babies, on through adolescence, middle age, seniors, and end-of-life care. For many years in this country, family doctors were really the foundation of the healthcare system, and without boring you too much about the history of the healthcare system, roughly around the years after World War II, specialists began to emerge. And the idea of general practice and being a generalist began to wane until there was a realization in the mid-60s that there was a shortage of primary care. Maybe a familiar phrase you've heard now. So they created a specialty called family medicine in the late 60s. And it's a specialty like other specialties, except that it's a generalist specialty. So for people... especially who are interested in Zen Buddhism and are comfortable with contradictions, you know, we're specialists in journalism. And I'm just tell you a little bit more about myself. I have I'm very fortunate to have a job where I'm able to do a lot of different things. Although I train in family medicine, my interest actually, since I was sort of a child of the late 60s and early 70s, my interest in medicine was really about its transforming effect on communities. And really have come to feel my role as a physician is I'm interested in making a difference, particularly to people who have little resources and who are marginalized. Many family physicians have that approach, not all. Nor is it unique to family medicine, but in general, many people who take care of marginalized people in our society, whether they're uninsured or Medicaid, disabled, are in that area. So there's a sort of a political and social justice part to my work. In addition to having an interest in alternative therapies, I lived in a macrobiotic community for a number of years in the 70s and was very interested in acupuncture and eventually get trained in something called homeopathy. So I've had a broad interest clinically. More recently, I've gotten involved in more administrative work and discovered that my role not only as practicing medicine but being an educator was very important to me. If I was began to realize, I think much like an organization like this, you begin to think about how you can influence more people and have a larger impact. And so being an educator and getting involved in medical education has been a part of my career. So currently I work in an organization called the Institute for Family Health. It's really a network of community health centers. These are safety net providers. Our organization also does work in education. We run three residency programs, one at Beth Israel, one at Harlem, and one upstate. And we do work with homeless shelters, school-based health centers. We have a number of dental centers in our facility, and we have what's called an integrated behavioral health program. It's a long description, but it sort of gives you perhaps a sense of what I do. And my role in the organization is I'm the senior physician. I'm sort of in charge of all the clinical services and the training programs. And I love what I do. it almost makes me tearful. I just feel so grateful to be able to be in the position that I am. And the irony is, the healthcare system is such a broken system right now, and it's in desperate need of healing. So many people who work in it feel broken. There's just a very unfortunate tension of choosing a field which is a calling, whether you're a physical therapist, a nurse, a clerk, a radiation technician, and to feel like you're brutalized by the system, you deal with so much anger and frustration, confusion, and yet I couldn't be happier. And connecting to vitality, I guess I want to, you know, either I am deluded, which is possible. I've spent a number of years in therapy and probably should go back, but, it's really if you think about these kinds of phenomena in life, when things are so broken, there's just so much opportunity. For people to bring energy to a broken system is such a powerful force. So that's really what I wanted to talk with you today about, hear from you about what your experiences are. And not only in terms of your own personal lives, whatever health issues you're dealing with your friends or family members, and certainly in your training, in your clinical experiences where you can make a difference. But I would point out right now, there's also a lot to be done politically and socially around this issue. Forgive me, I'm going to digress a little bit, but I just feel this is such a tragic time in our history. You know, this thing about shootings is so disturbing. And, we seem to feel like if we could control guns, we could make a difference. And, my belief is that's probably not going to work for a variety of reasons. And we look to the mental health professions and say, well, how do we help these people who need help? And, from my view, it's the mental health system that needs help. To somehow identify people. We're in a world where we should screen better. We should identify these people earlier on. We should engage them in treatment. Treatment which pretty much is drugs, because we don't have enough people who can actually heal. Especially young people who seem so much in pain. It just sort of struck me coming today and being here with you. Why is it that people feel compelled to kill other people? And to me, it's a spiritual emptiness. They feel no place for themselves on the planet. Now, there could be a diagnosis for that, and there could be a series of very rational psychosocial explanations for that. But that doesn't give you, to me, what you need to do to reach out to those people. So people like yourselves who appreciate really the essential role that connecting with one's spirit, both for yourself and the people that you work with, is clearly where we need to put a lot of our energy and focus. So I'm going to end that part of the soapbox and just say that the social mission of what you do, I think, is really something to just try to keep in mind. In whatever setting that you're working with, the system really needs you. We have, as Chodo and Kosha know, we have an inpatient service at Beth Israel. Among my roles, I'm chairman of family medicine at the hospital, and being in that role, I get to sort of choose which toys are in the sandbox. And so we run our own separate floor, and we've been very fortunate to have people from this program serve as pastoral counselors. And it's a training service for the residents and medical students and nurses and nursing students. And the goal really is to create, to the extent that you can, a community for people who are in a, who are in crisis and families in crisis because they're in the hospital. And I really try to encourage all the people that I work with to pay attention to this kind of dimension of the need to be present in the work that you do. One thing I've learned from my dear friends is the skill of, before you go into a room, take a moment, erase your assumptions, remember who you are, and listen. And be patient. And sometimes the people that I work with listen to me, sometimes they don't, so we have a second conversation. Again, this is about their development as physicians and healers, and so, I try to model being patient, the work that you're learning, there needs to be a place that is created for this kind of experience to occur. In many ways, you are learners, but you're also teachers at what you do. And those of us who are beneficiaries of that are grateful. There's a lot of things that are going on in the healthcare system that are really quite exciting, and I'll talk a little bit about that, and then maybe we can go into a little bit of an exchange. One of the exciting things about working right now in healthcare, because it's so broken, is there's opportunities for innovation. And more than ever, there are opportunities to deal with what have been called the social or ultimately political determinants of health. So we know that a lot of people have chronic illnesses because of poor choices. Well, what leads to people making poor choices? Well, among other things, limited choices leads to poor choices. Limited opportunities. Having difficult access to good food, to places to exercise and be active physically, to have stable homes and not worry about violence in your community. So there's this thing that you can now Google and read about called social determinants of health, and these are themes that are beginning to become much part of the fabric of our healthcare system. The expectation is to inquire about the status of these issues when you're doing a history and talking to patients and trying to get a handle on what's going on, in part because whatever you recommend is going to be influenced by these other factors. And there are some very unfortunate things going on, the explosion of the cost of drugs, generic drugs, generic drugs used to be cheap. Now there, some of them are more expensive than brand name drugs. And so when you're talking to patients about, here you have this problem, high blood pressure, diabetes, headaches, take this medication, you need to then have the next question, so how are you going to get access to this? And these are things that weren't normally thought of as part of what we needed to do. Asking about where people are going to have access to good food, so this is good. I mean, these are good things that are happening. What's missing is more discussion about the spiritual dimensions of people's lives. Or as I kind of like to say, so I help you get better. Now what? Or some conversations I have with people as they're aging who are feeling demoralized, you know, and their friends are passing away and their lives are, quote, shrinking as in addition to their height and their gums. And so what place do they have? And, you know, as a physician, and I've been fortunate to practice in the same place for a long time, over 25 years, I have these long-standing relationships. You know, I know people well enough. We can have these kinds of discussions. And I learn a lot from talking to people. But there really isn't a place to have these discussions in the healthcare system. This is a dimension that you guys are bringing. Part of my fantasy is that some of the traditional places that you're working in hospitals, possibly in hospice settings and sort of end-of-life care and the stuff that quite frankly, I mean, this is kind of amazing thinking back 15 years ago that this is now expected is just incredible. We expect to have people like yourselves as part of a healthcare team. We maybe shouldn't limit it to this. That quite frankly, anybody at any stage in their lives can be in spiritual distress. Now, is this a healthcare issue? No, I don't know. For a person with a chronic illness, it certainly could be. For a person who's, you know, dealing with certainly mental illnesses, it certainly could be. It's really unfortunate. I want to sort of trash the whole mental health industry, but you know, they are really in crisis because they've, you know, chosen to narrow down their toolkit to just a couple of tools. You know, it's basically one or two hammers and a few nails. And I don't know how they're going to deal with screwing in a screw or they need glue or something. It's a difficult situation. But what you folks can bring in terms of a spiritual dimension, I think, is really important.